Okay, good evening, everyone. Broadcasting live. May 23rd. Today we're going to do another Dhammapada, so no video. And I'm using a different mic, so here's hoping that goes okay. I realize the mic I've been using isn't as good as I thought it was. Maybe this one's better. Hello and welcome back to our study of the Dhammapada. Today we continue on with verse number 135. Which reads as follows. Yatha dandena gopalo gavo pache tigo charam evang chara chamachucha ayum pache tipaninam. Which means, just as a cowherd with a stick drives the cows to the cow pasture, even so, old age and death, jara jamachuja, drives the life of beings, or literally leads the age. This is where our age is leading us to. So, another brief story, but this one's quite pertinent and interesting, I think, especially for us meditators. The story goes that in the time of the Buddha, there was a great holiday. But of course, a holiday means a holy day. So the Buddha established, in line with the Hindu tradition, that the full moon would be a holy day. It seems that it sort of happened because Buddhists, or people who were interested in the Buddhist teaching, who were in the Hindu society or the Indian society, would ask the Buddha, how should I keep the holy day? I'm not going to worship a god or something. What should I do? And the Buddha outlined a way to keep a holy day. So it doesn't seem like the Buddha actually said yes. Everyone has to keep these days, but that rather it would be a way to keep the established holidays in a Buddhist way. And of course, monks had to, on the full moon and the empty moon, had their holy days where they had to come together and recite, and the Buddha did lay that down. But for lay people, it seems a little bit more just going with the tradition, the Hindu tradition, but turning it into Buddhism. So they would keep the eight Buddhist precepts, and they would go and listen to the Buddhist teaching and stay at the monastery. Maybe. Anyway, so there were on this day there were 500 women who took upon themselves the holy day activities. So they took the eight precepts and they went to listen to the Buddha's teaching. And Visakha came and saw that there were young women, and there were middle-aged women, and there were old women. And so she was curious as to why they were doing this. What was the purpose? What was their intention? Were they all doing it for the right reasons? And so she went to them. She went to the oldest of them and asked, what are you... What are you doing? Why are you keeping the holy day? Why are you doing this? And they said, because we want to go to heaven. We're old and we're wishing for heaven. We want that when we die, the purity of our minds should lead us to be born as angels, where we can enjoy the divine bliss. So their religious life was for heaven. So she went on and asked the middle-aged women why they were keeping the holiday, and they answered, in order to get out of the power of our husbands. So they came to stay at the monastery and maybe to become nuns, to escape their home life, the burden of being a housewife in India under the power of her husband, who might abuse her or control her, or require her to do menial labor. It can be quite odious for women in India at that time. And so then she went on and asked the young women and asked them, why are you keeping the holiday? And these are the young women who were married, though. Sort of the prime of life. And they said, we hope that through the power of our goodness, the power of this good deed, we'll be able to conceive a child, get pregnant. And this is a very common thing in India and even in Sri Lanka among Buddhist families. They believe that the goodness of their good deeds, whether they give a gift to monks, or pour water over the Bodhi tree, or that kind of thing, will lead them to get pregnant. They wanted children. And so, curiouser and curiouser, she goes to the unmarried women. Here we have the old women who are fed up with life and they're not looking for anything in life, they want to be born in heaven. The middle-aged women are just trying to escape their husbands. The younger women, younger married women, are looking to have children. What are these young women, unmarried girls? Why are they coming to listen to the Buddha's teaching and to keep the precepts? And they say, well, we're doing it because we want to get married. We want a husband. We'd like to get a husband while we're still young, because it seems kind of funny that the older women would be trying to escape their husbands, and why are these ones going for it? But it seems that it was probably even a worse fate than getting married in India, to be a widow, or to be an old maid, to have never been married, because then you're looked down upon as the lowest of the low. You bring no honor to your family. You bring no money to your family, and so you end up being a slave and doing menial labor. But women had it quite bad in India, quite hard, it seems. I think even today there's a lot of this problems going on where women are treated as inferiors and so on. But she thought it curious that none of them, or it seemed like many of them anyway, had no interest in doing it for spiritual purposes, for purity of mind, for attaining nibbana. It all was for actually quite mundane purposes. This is why they were practicing spirituality, why they were practicing the spiritual, the holy life, so to speak. And so she went to the Buddha and asked him, and told him of this, and asked him, why is this? Why don't these people see the greatness of this teaching? Why aren't they practicing it for the right reasons? The Buddha said, it is amazing, you know. Old age, sickness, and death are like, he says, are like cowherds. And so he's leading up to this verse. He says, birth sends them to old age sends them to sickness, sickness sends them to death. They cut life short as though they cut with an axe. But he says, but despite this, and this is what's interesting for us, there are none that desire absence of rebirth. Rebirth is all they desire. There's none that desire absence of arising, absence of things. None that wish to be free. Of course, many of us nowadays don't even think about being reborn, but we want the arising of things. We want birth, whether it be the birth of a child, whether it be the birth of marriage, whether it be the birth of something. We want things for our life. We have goals that we wish to achieve. And he says, and then so then he tells this verse. Now, sort of to unpack this. I mean, it's clear, and this is a clear reminder for us that indeed old age, sickness, and death are in store for us. We're all headed that way. And being born is, it leads to that. Now, this is sort of a classic Buddhist teaching. But the interesting thing is how attached we are. How in general this applies to just about everything. Everything is subject to change. Anything we attain, anything we obtain is subject to dissolution, subject to change, impermanence, instability, uncertainty, unpredictability. You get something, you can't expect for it to stay. You can't be sure that you're going to get what you want. So we build up these expectations and desires, and we're disappointed. Our lives are not entirely pleasant. And in fact, it's probably a 50-50 balance for most people. Even people who think that their lives are mostly or mainly or entirely pleasant, it's only because they're unable to see that and unable to remember and quick to forget the stress and the suffering that comes along with life. And over the years, we build up a tolerance to this, and we come to understand happiness as mixed. You know, what is true happiness? It's having a smile at the end of the day after you've worked hard. And of course, the work is not always pleasant, but we still think it's happiness. And we're quick to ignore or forget the pain and the suffering goes along with not just physical labor, but interactions with other people, arguments, worries, and stress, and loss, and so on. And so basically what the Buddha is saying is he's pointing out that attachment to things is not based on ration. It's not based on reason. You know, a drug addict will tell you, you know, it's not logical that they're addicted to drugs. They know that it's causing them suffering. Once they can admit that they're an addict, they know that it's bad for them. It's not rational. But for most of us, we're not even there yet. Of course, when it's a subtle attachment, whatever we're attached to in the world, there's very few people who would say that it's a problem or it's bad. But yet, when asked why or what is the benefit of attachment, what is the benefit of indulgence and pleasure, which you know, seems to be very much the essence or the reason for living, they can't really come up with a good reason. Like it's not based on rationale, like why do you attach to these things? Now, the reason people usually give is because it makes me happy. Right? We think that the things that we attach to, the things that we strive for, these things make us happy. And we're unable to see the true nature of these things. We're unable to see the stress that's caused by chasing, the stress that's caused by not getting what you want, the stress that's caused by loss. We're unable to see the true nature of things. And so the Buddha says that despite this, our desires for things are in spite of reason. And when lost my train of thought because my battery just went out. So that recording's not going to work. Well, I'll go on and finish it and I can record this again later. So that's get back on track. Our desires, we desire things. And our desires don't make us happier. This is the thing, is we want things and we believe that they make us happy. This is what we come to see when we practice meditation. We see how the mind really works, how our addictions are just creating this, well, creating more addiction. Our chasing after things is creating this intense addiction, attachment. And when you finally sit down and try to just be, you find it impossible because your mind is drawn, is pulled and pushed by things you like and dislike. And this doesn't come out of nowhere. It's not just who we are. It comes directly out of the habits of clinging, the habits of chasing, the habits of needing, wanting. So what meditation shows you, it seems like this is ridiculous. Why would we come and sit and torture ourselves when we could be enjoying the things that we love? And so it's essential that we break through and see the connection. That there really is a connection between our desires and our suffering. The suffering of meditation, it's not because of meditation. Meditation is actually quite peaceful. You're just walking and sitting. What's wrong? The problem is not with the practice. It's directly with what we're attached to, our needs and our wants that make us unable to sit, unable to be objective, unable to be patient. Unable to exist without the objects of our desire. So, would have been the Dhammapada talk for this evening, and maybe I'll go on a little bit more, but now I'm going to have to re-record it because I'm not diligent in recharging batteries. So, we'll stop there. And I will record that again later. How's the audio? Does anyone hear me? You can open the window again. It's getting very hot in here. Thank you. All the way, just open it. How important is it to be able to sit in a full lotus? Have you read my booklet on how to meditate? I'm pretty sure it doesn't tell you to sit in a full lotus, but that's a sign that you haven't read my booklet. So before I answer more of your questions, maybe you have. If you have, not very carefully, I think. You don't have to sit full lotus. Not important. I read a story called The Golden Pagoda, The Silver Pagoda, and The Pile of Mud. Well, since I'm not a Zen Buddhist, I can't tell you whether that's a koan or not. I think you got the wrong monk. Why, when I meditate, I find everything funny? Now, getting back to habits, we have habits. Sounds like this is a habit that you have. Sometimes habits that are deep, you know, it's not a normal habit, but when you get into a concentrated state, it pokes its head up. But not everyone finds everything funny when they meditate. It is common. It's common to find things more humorous. It's sort of along the process of letting go, because humor has to do with stopping to take things so seriously. So for some people, along the way, that means finding them funny. too many orange people tonight. If you're wondering what orange means, if your name is in orange, it means you haven't meditated with this. Over half of the people are orange. So I think we're gonna go. I'm gonna say goodnight. I'll go recharge my batteries. Most of y'all didn't meditate with us. So, this is a meditation group, meditation community. If you come here, you should be meditating with us. Some of you I know meditate at different times, that's fine. But usually most people who join here will have been meditating like the hour before 9. The hour before the talk. It'd be good if we're all meditating together beforehand, then the talk is more beneficial. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in. Apologies for the mess up. I'll try and get it right next time. Good night. Battery showed that it was mostly full.